In August, Costco started selling gold bars because why not?
Could you imagine that meeting, the pitch meeting for merchandising? Like, there must be a gold bug in there. And he's like, look, inflation's high. There's limited supply of this thing. It's a space rock. Well, let's get it in.
If anybody would have visibility into inflation, it would be Costco, right?
That's true. Yeah. Except for that hot dog. They keep it consistent there.
Well, I don't even remember a couple of years ago when we started NIA, when Square was talking, Square/Block, Jack Dorsey's payments company, they're like, we have the real inflation indicators, right? Just from transactions. But they don't have the real inflation indicators. Costco literally has a visibility to every sector of the economy, right? Some people forget, Costco runs gas stations. The point is this, they'll shove anything through their distribution as long as they think the consumers want it. And I like it. Blau's like, maybe consumers want some gold.
Welcome to another episode of Not Investment Advice. We've got Trung Phan, Bilal Zaidi here. Unfortunately, Jack couldn't join, but we got a packed agenda for you. Trung, let's start off with meme of the week here. There's only one place to start. Darren tagged us for this.
And this friend of the pod. Yeah. Here we go.
Let's see. Let me just pull this
it's
up here.
It's a clip from Costco. When you hear the words clip from Costco,
you know
it's going to be some Costco member wilding out.
Incredible. All right, let me do.
All right, let's see what we got here.
1 second.
Yeah, hit it.
This meanwhile, is from Costco's finest. I've hit got it. Five chickens. Oh my God. All right.
Got five chickens. I don't want any LED on them. None. Scan my shirt five times, buddy. Five times.
Bro. For the listeners. Okay, yo, can you pause?
That's respect, right?
For the listeners. Even for the people who are looking at this, probably not understanding. There's some dude at Costco who bought five rotisserie chickens. He doesn't want the LED scanner light on the chicken.
On the chicken. But he's fine with it hitting the dome on him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, just hit my eyes with it. That's incredible.
Presumably he doesn't want it because this is the way for the government to control your mind or something,
because
right?
He's chipped. Because he's got a chip in him.
Yeah, he's chipped.
You know what I mean?
He does not want the LED on. So he has the Costco chicken barcode on his t-shirt.
Also, does he not look a little bit like the KFC Colonel guy?
Like, yeah, he did. Well, he looks,
adds to the joke, right?
There's no way.
I don't want to charge it on this car.
There's no way they're scanning his
look
shirt.
At the
Are
chickens.
They doing it?
I don't know if they get to it eventually.
Bro,
anyway.
Are they scanning the shirt?
Let's see. There we go. He signs it five times. He puts the hands up too.
Done.
That's brilliant. Okay, perp. All right, that's enough. Yo, that's meme of the week contender.
Dude,
that's an all time.
Hold on a second. Blah, let me make sure I got
Incredible.
This right. I'm going to tell you what I saw. And I want you to. So, some dude that looks like a,
Colonel Sanders/
yep. Albert Einstein
that's
rolls up
it, yeah.
to the Costco cashier. All we know is that he had at least five rotisserie chickens. We don't know what else he had. Maybe he had some vitamin D.
A couple dozen croissants in there.
You gotta get the Costco bakery goes hard.
So
this dude rolls up, but he does not want the did he say that he didn't want the LED scanner on the presumable croissants? I didn't hear that.
I didn't
but
see maybe, that. It's just the chicken because the croissant they're baked, so they're protected.
Yeah.
But the chicken is raw protein. It's not raw, but it's. There's a cooling down period, so you don't want to be interfering. Man, that is wild. Also, the incredible thing, he has it printed on a t-shirt. It's not like he took the sticker and was like, hey, use this. He got it printed on a t-shirt. All right, let's get going. So talking of Costco, we're going to talk real quickly Costco gold bars, because if everyone in our world knows, gold has been up significantly this year. There's been a lot of talk of inflation. There has been inflation. We all gone, apart from at Costco.
What is this inflation? Blah, like, what's this inflation? I don't see it anywhere.
I see it in the supermarket, but maybe not with the chicken, because, chicken, they keep it clean with the prices there. We're going to talk about Costco gold real quick, and then we're going to talk about Tesla. Tesla's been having a hell of a year. Talking of things that are up, Tesla is not, unfortunately, this year. They're a bit down, but over a five-year period, they're still smashing it. But there's a lot of things to discuss there with the full self-driving that you've been doing, and robo-taxi as well. And then for our music/culture fans, we're going to be talking about Drake Kendrick AI music. That is going to be a nice little throwback for us. Obviously, people know we're all hip-hop fans here. But this we found a way to shoehorn it in, right? Because we've been following the beef. It sounds like you listen to the song, right?
It's
so we're
going to
talk about that today as well, and also Taylor Swift, obviously, because if you're going to talk Drake and we're going to talk about the goats of music, you got to have Taylor Swizzy in there. So we're going to talk about her new album and her being back on TikTok. So let's start with Costco Gold Trunk. This is your time. What is going on with Costco and the fact they're actually selling physical gold bars?
Yeah, so in August, Costco started selling gold bars because why not?
Could you imagine that meeting, the pitch meeting for merchandising? Like, there must be a gold bug in there. And he's like, look, inflation's high. There's limited supply of this thing. It's a space rock. Let's get it in.
If anybody would have visibility into inflation, it would be Costco, right?
That's true. Yeah. So except for that hot dog. They keep it consistent there.
Well, I don't even remember a couple of years ago when we started NIA, when Square was talking, Square/Block, Jack Dorsey's payments company, they're like, we have the real inflation indicators, right? Just from transactions. But they don't have the real inflation indicators. Costco literally has a visibility to every sector of the economy, right? Some people forget. Costco runs gas stations, right? Like the whole Costco thesis of we'll sell everything at a minimum markup, you know, 15% max, but usually under 5%. But we make all our money from the membership. I think 100 million members a year. Anyways, the point is this. They'll shove anything through their distribution as long as they think the consumers want it. And I like Blau's like, maybe consumers want some gold.
Who doesn't like a little shiny rock action? You know.
So
what I mean?
Wells Fargo estimates that Costco now sells $200 million worth of gold. They're selling pretty close to spot price. And the reason that is because the majority of these Costco sales of gold bars are actually online. So if you go to Costco physically, there are viral photos online of people like seeing the bars. They're 1 ounce bars. So it's, I guess today that's about $2,300. I mean, what is 1 ounce? 28 grams.
Wait, you knew that too quick. Wait,
yeah, the OC. That OC.
28.
Listen, I grew up in like Vancouver, man. I didn't participate, but I had friends that were quick to be trying to
quick
get
math.
Them. You know, they got them little baggies. We're going to get demonetized. Yeah,
that's fine. Today we're going to play music and we're not monetizing anyway. Yes. But if we ever were going to monetize, it's not this episode. So we're fine. It's fine. We could go wild today. Just do what you want to do. But yeah, so you know the measurement either way.
Your family is from the subcontinent. We're gold. Physical.
Oh, yeah.
India. I mean, obviously you're Pakistani, but the history. India. I'm sure Pakistan's similar. Well, let me ask you.
Yeah.
Does Pakistan have the similar pickup of physical gold as India?
I think,
does?
Yeah, it's definitely a strong correlation to, you know, what happens in India. I might say that India, maybe if India is a 10 out of 10, maybe Pakistan's a 9.5. Like, I think they're very close. But I think India sometimes goes extra hard for some reason, which I'm not sure. But it also depends. But yeah, when you're getting married, there's like dowry, you know, so like you'd just be putting gold into earrings, those nose rings and stuff. Like you see, like my mom when she'd be going to weddings back in the day, just looking
no,
like
I'm
a rapper.
No, I'm laughing because I know exactly what you're talking about. My sister-in-law is Indian, so I've been to an
original
Indian wedding.
Bling bling kings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Original. Yeah. So I got two thoughts. My first thought is I realize how much we're missing Jack for this because it's about Costco. We actually didn't originally plan for this. Number two is to your point. If people don't know, India is responsible for like a fifth or a third, some crazy number. I mean, it's the largest population in the world, but 1.4 billion. But they, in terms of physical gold, I think it's like central banks in the world and then like Indian aunties and uncles. Like literally, like that is like the ranking of who owns the most physical gold. But then Costco probably caught wind of this. You know, Costco since August has been selling gold. And again, they're not making a crazy markup on it. They make all their money on the membership. Can they give something their customers want, make them happy? And it looks like it's happening. They're selling they're up to $200 million worth of gold. And I just want to give you some perspective. That sounds like a lot. Here's a reference point. China's central bank, which is buying up gold like crazy, And a part of it, why they're doing it, is because they saw what happened when Russia invaded Ukraine and America seized all those assets, Russian assets globally, like the reserves. China's stocking up. I mean, we're being honest. They're preparing in a, this is the news. They've been looking at Taiwan for a long time and they realize that if they're making that move, I'm not, you know, there's questions whether or not they will, but they need to have the backup. The backup is to have a lot of gold. I mean, that's the reality.
A store of value.
Yeah, a store of value and a you know, something that's globally accepted and that will be much harder to freeze because it's literally in their banks, like in that dock, like I forgot, Goldfinger from the James Bond movie.
Trunk, can I ask real quick?
Yeah.
Just real quick. Have you ever bought gold, like physical gold?
Never.
What, or like even on a chain, a little watch or
never.
A ring?
Am I missing out?
What about GLD ETF or something like that? You got
I
any
did
of those?
For a while, but it was not performative.
Yeah,
so I dropped it. I dropped it for assets that lost money. Yeah. So,
and then this year, yeah. It's been up 20-30%. Yeah. I think got a small amount of that GLD, but I don't have physical.
Instead of having GLD, which was just like inching up a couple percent every year, I guess before the last 18 months, I was just losing money instead. It was more fun to lose money. But so to give you perspective, $200 million a month, China's central bank bought $400 million in March, 160,000 ounces. So there's your perspective. Costco buyers in aggregate are like China's central bank. Like that's the level that's going on here. And if you throw in like big institutionals, like, you know, pensions and asset managers, like the big boys, the ET, you mentioned GLD. So GLT is the gold ETF, famous gold ETF. Their actual physical holdings of gold has declined by 20%. A fifth since end of 2022. But you mentioned at top, since the same time span, the price of gold has gone up because of the physical buying that we're all talking about. And probably a lot of aunties and uncles from the subcontinent.
Well.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is, I think like... I remember doing ages ago, one of the first like crypto pods I ever did was on Creator Lab about Bitcoin. And the guy was talking about gold. And that was the first time I heard the narrative. Maybe it was like 2017. I can't remember. And did you know gold is just a magic space rock? It's just literally basically from like space. And it lands here and they be mining it up. I didn't even know that. That is wild. And no, but all jokes aside, the crazy thing is, like all, we always talk about narratives on here and limited supply and, you know, the correlations between gold's narrative and Bitcoin, obviously. Like this is like an interesting thing because for our adult lives, gold hasn't really been doing that much. It has been that kind of steady thing. So like, do you feel like that increase this year is, I mean, that must be the highest increase in the last 10, 15 years, right? For gold?
It's on a run.
I wonder what compared to like 2008, like when there was the recession, do you think?
Oh, you're talking like percentage increase?
Yeah. Like
no,
this has got to be the biggest. Yeah, sorry. Increase in the price of gold, I'm saying.
At speed. This is up there. This is amongst the fastest. Yeah.
Which is quite an interesting thing, right? Because we've talked about how everything, you know, is increasing exponentially, even just comparing it, obviously, in US dollars. And the whole point with gold is always about, oh, it's steady enough. And so now you've got this correlation with, or this contrast to Bitcoin, which is way more volatile, but in aggregate has obviously increased more than pretty much anything over the last 10 years. So anyway, is there anything else on gold at Costco? I mean, it's quite an interesting move. Is anyone else doing this like at that scale?
I mean, they're nobody's going to do, I mean, the only other place I could do that type of volume is Walmart, but like, probably a different
next to the gun
set,
section,
right?
You know.
Yeah, next to the gun. Well, guns and gold. There you go, right? You want to prepare for the apocalypse. Other thing that was funny, and you'll appreciate this because I know you do points with your credit cards. How deep are you in the points game?
I'm like, I would say a 7 out of 10. Like, I've got a lot of
you have
points.
A Chase? You got the Chase?
Yeah, I've got 2-3 Chase. I've got the Reserve. I've got the business card. I've got, yeah. And then I even just found a thing recently where I can pay my rent using a card where you get
points. How did you do the math on that? Let me ask you that, because the credit card fee was like what, 2%? Chase is expensive.
No,
right?
This is not even a fee, because here I don't know what's like in Canada. In the UK, I've been paying direct deposit through bank accounts for
no, but is that debit or credit?
No, this is that's in the US. You have to send a check.
Yeah. Oh.
Like a physical check. Like I've been in maybe 1, 2, 3 places. My girlfriend, same. Everywhere, like she used to literally walk her check and give it by hand to her place. So now with Chase, you can just say, send this amount of money to this address. But there's a service there. I don't want to give them a shout out because I've only just started using it, so I don't want to endorse them. But you can essentially, they send a check and you are essentially getting a Wells Fargo card or something on the back end. But that will end up being points that otherwise was just money going, you know, I wasn't getting any points for that. So I would say 7 out of 10 because the redemption side, I'm a little lazy with it. Because to get the like travel, you need to like transfer it to the airline and do all this bonus stuff, and I ain't got time for that. So what about you? Are you deep in the game with that?
It sounds like you're deeper than me. I know that you could get some crazy stuff if you do it well, right?
Like I feel like I'm saving it for like a big trip. Like one day when I'm not working as much and I actually take a proper break, I'll go ball out with those points. Because I've got quite a lot of points, yeah.
Or the upgrades, right? Like you want to be able to fly business everywhere you go. You want
flying to Japan, you want to just ball out, you know, like
laying down. Well, that's funny with like how you're using it. You nailed it, right? Is like, do you just save it up for the greatest trip ever? Or do you kind of like dinky docky? Like sometimes you have to book a last second flight and you like can't get a good price, so you use your points. But you're like, oh man, I just burnt those for like a coach flight to San Francisco, which is something I've done.
It's true. Yeah.
But the reason I brought that up is because a lot of members at Costco are trying the ARB, the gold. So they're making these massive gold purchases, although you're limited how many bars you can buy, but they're trying to get points. Because you'll get cash back rewards and if you use the Costco card to buy. But here's the problem. The Wall Street Journal had an amazing article about it. You think you're going in there. You think you're going to ARB Costco? You think you're going to... So first of all, Costco lets you return basically anything. You can bring anything back to Costco. And they'll just be like, yeah, whatever, man. Like as long as you're paying your fee. Except these gold bars, they will not buy back from you. They will not refund. Partly because they want to like cut off this ARBing. So people are buying at Costco, getting the Costco card points, and they're like, oh, I'm just going to resell the gold, and then everybody wins. It's not that easy. Gold dealers, when they buy 1 ounce bars, they're hitting you with a 5% discount. It's like off the bat. Like if you're talking about the bid-ask spread, it's quite large for 1 ounce bars of gold from Costco.
It's quite a lot
right?
of work for this small percentage. You know
exactly,
what I mean?
Right? Yeah. So they'll give you 5%, up to 5% discount. That wipes out any credit card rewards you've made. So you go through all this trouble to lose money. You know what I mean? So that was a funny side angle.
The other thing is we didn't cover it on the pod, but Robinhood launched this 5% credit card thing. You probably saw that. And I haven't got it yet, but I did apply for it.
Tell me your thoughts on it. I'll walk us through what you did.
Well,
the
main thing is, I think it was 5%. Was it 3% or 5%? It might be 3%.
No, it's high. It's high.
Let me check real quick because it's quite important. Robinhood, credit card, cash back. Let me just see card, cash back. I think it might be 3% actually. Yeah, 3%. But that is pretty much the best in the market. Because if, you know, I'm also a business, like I spend money on advertising, like all sorts of stuff. And just to get 3% back is quite a good redemption amount essentially. And so even so much that people were using it to pay their taxes. So it's what you were saying, like what's the fee? If your fee is 2% and you're getting 3% back, you're basically getting a percent discount, which again, Jack on this pod will be laughing like you guys are thinking about the wrong things, which I kind of agree with. But you know, if you're spending a lot of money on tax, you're going to do it anyway. It's free money though, right? If you actually have that delta. And also just the sentimental thing of getting a discount on your taxes, that's like, you got to do that, man. We all trying to make sure that we doing the best we can there. So that is an interesting thing. I'm curious, maybe we don't cover it today, but Robinhood, they're doing that. And they're also doing the Roth IRA things. They're giving, that might be 5% match or something. It's quite a significant match if you move your IRA and Roth over there, which is also like, I don't know if I personally would want to do that, but like, you know, putting your retirement accounts.
Why wouldn't you? Are you concerned about the going concern?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've had bad experiences without going in detail of companies going out of business where you store money. And just, I hope Robinhood, I don't think they're going to go out of business. They're a public company. They're probably fine. But do I think they have a non-zero chance of going out of business compared to a Vanguard? Maybe I'm a boomer here, but I probably would just stick.
No, that's Lindy, right? Vanguard's 40 years plus.
That's it. And Robinhood, I just feel like, has more chance of doing some wild stuff behind the scenes versus a Vanguard. Again, I have no evidence.
You're right, though. To pay the rewards, they might be doing some YOLO stuff.
That's what I'm saying. And we've been seeing it. We've experienced it through the crypto stuff. There's been BlockFi, Celsius, all that stuff that happened. That stuff is still being dealt with, FTX. So to me, because I've been burned a little bit in that world, I'm like, okay, there's a price for safety and the psychological safety. I don't want to be going to sleep at night worried about my 401k in Robinhood's app. You know what I mean? Now, I will say I did actually open up a Roth IRA there just to try it out, like a new one. And so I was like, oh, let me just try it out. But I'm not going to transfer my old retirement accounts over there. But I have old school TradFi friends in an investing group that I've told you about. And lots of them were moving it over. And I was quite surprised because they're not the sort of people that would normally use Robinhood. They were just trying to get a benefit here. Anyway, let's move on. Anything else in Costco Gold before we talk about Tesla Trunk?
No, that was amazing. And we did miss Jack on that one. But I like how you subbed in for Jack by saying Jack would not be impressed by us trying to skim 1%.
He's like, they're asking the wrong questions here, boys. You know what I mean? So, all right. Tesla, robo-taxi, and also self-driving car. Like, you've been using it. Let's give a little bit of context of the state of the company. I'll just say, again, this is a not investment advice podcast, but Tesla has been had a hard year in terms of stock market price. They're down 41% this year. However, for context, over the last 5 years, they're still up 830%. So just to give people a slightly longer time horizon, obviously been one of the best performing stocks in the last, 5-10 years. However long it's been around. I'm pretty sure I bought and sold Tesla within a month, so I didn't get to gain all those benefits.
Did you get a W?
I mean, a small W. The same thing I did with Nvidia, probably. Like, I fumbled the bag on that, like 2015 or something. But anyway, what is the situation? I mean, before we go into robotaxi and the self-driving stuff, like, could you give us a bit more context around what has been happening? Why you think the stock price has been getting hit this year? What's the general sentiment there?
Let me rattle stuff up. Stop me at any point. And just for the listeners, you're going to listen to this on Wednesday morning. Tesla is doing its earnings this afternoon, so we're missing that. The expectation is not good. So Bilal already teed it up. Down, they say 40% on the year. That's like, I mean, from its peak at $1.1 trillion, it's down close to $500 billion, if not more. So a big part of its narrative is, and we have talked about this, was Elon has said that Tesla, at that lofty valuation, it's purely based on autonomy. Like, he thinks it's quite binary.
It's based on what? Sorry?
Autonomy.
Autonomy. Okay.
Yeah. Can AI operate machinery, starting with cars, obviously, but they have a robotics division. Autonomy is a massive piece of this puzzle, right? There's also the other part is energy storage and then the EV revolution itself. So let's start with the EV revolution because that's where the business
electronic
is
vehicle. Okay, I know most people know that, but just
electric
saying.
Vehicle, right? This is where the thesis.
They've been the pioneers in this space, obviously.
They're the pioneer. And the mission was always start with expensive cars, $100,000 that Leo DiCaprio will buy, right? Prove that you can make an electric vehicle that's sexy. And that works. And then
I love that you said Leo. Is that the phrase they've used, or is that just...
No. Well, Leo is one of the first buyers of the S and the Roadster. But the crucible moment for for Tesla was, could it create a mass market car? The Model 3 in 2018, if you remember Elon talking about like hell, like production hell, that was when the entire company's online on the edge of bankruptcy. And they pulled through. They were able to manufacture Models 3 and then now the Model Y, which is like a crossover at scale. Last year, I believe, or at least in Q4, the Model Y was the best-selling vehicle in the world, period. Not just electric, any car.
Yeah, I think we mentioned
that.
Yeah,
we talked about that, right?
Yeah.
And I have a Model 3, very happy with it. It's just night and day driving a Model 3 versus an older vehicle, like a Civic or a Corolla. Both great cars, by the way. I've had both. But so they were at the forefront, as you said, the leader of the EV revolution. Now, you had mentioned pre-chat if we should talk about BYD. And of course, we should talk about BYD. BYD For people who don't know, is a Chinese EV manufacturer. BYD stands for Beyond Your Dreams. They started as a battery maker in the early 2000s. They actually took a large investment from Charlie Munger. And Charlie Munger, I think, late vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway.
Legend.
Warren Buffett's RIP. BFF. Yeah, yeah. Rest in peace.
Every
Thread Boy's favorite. They started manufacturing batteries. But when I talked about 2018 and Tesla's Hell Week, something that people don't understand about that is they're on the brink of bankruptcy, and their lifeline was actually the Shanghai Tesla factory, which now produces, I think, 30 to 40% of all Teslas. And also the Chinese market to buy Teslas, which are seen as a luxury vehicle. That helped Tesla immensely to get through the production hell. Now, the downside is this. All that technology that Tesla did in Shanghai, that knowledge basically was transferred to the Chinese market. And one of the big things that was transferred was something called the Gigapress. For people, Bilal, you'll know this, and we've talked about it. The main thing with EV, electric vehicles, versus traditional cars is there's just so fewer parts. There's not an internal combustion engine. You don't have to deal with the gasoline tank and all that. It's like, it's electric. So you have the drivetrain and then a massive battery. Yeah. And you can manufacture the body in one piece or a minimum pieces. The Gigapress is what did that. Now, the Gigapress was pioneered by Tesla. But now that technology that went to Shanghai in the Shanghai factory, the people that developed that sold it to other manufacturers. And if you remember M-Pesa, how M-Pesa was a Nigerian telecoms company, right?
Are they from Nigeria? Oh, Kenya, I thought. Or...
Oh, Kenya, you're right, Kenya. Yeah. So Kenya is famous. The reason I bring up M-Pesa is this. There's this whole idea in economics about leapfrogging technology. As in, you're so underdeveloped at one point that at the time that you start to develop, you get to leapfrog like decades of older technologies because, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're starting you're going straight to mobile in that case for M-Pesa. Whereas here, we're still sending checks. You know what I mean? Like
telegrams and faxes, right? Because it's all legacy technology. It's in all these.
They just
all these
make that leap.
Yeah. So Kenya, they're industrializing not, you know, in the 70s or 80s. They get to do it in the early 2000s, say. They're like, okay, well, we didn't have many people having banking, but now there's mobile. Like we just can just skip going through like just relying on branches. We'll go straight to mobile. And that's what they did. So they leapfrogged and they got a lot of people into mobile banking. And that's people's first, a lot of the Kenyan population, their first bank account was basically mobile, right? That's the idea. You get the leapfrog technology. Same thing with China. China never had a large internal combustion engine car manufacturing industry, right? Because obviously Japan through the 70s, 80s was much richer than China. And China didn't get a chance to move up the manufacturing from clothes to, you know, like simple hardware electronics to cars. They were nowhere near that curve. But now we're moving towards EV. So they get to jump just the way that Kenya jumped to mobile payments.
Get straight
and
to
they're
it,
jumping
yeah.
to EV, right? So China is becoming an electric vehicle monster. And part of it is because Tesla had to go to them in 2018. We remember we talked here about the CHIPS Act and how the Biden government is giving so much stimulus, so much incentive to manufacture chips in America because it's a national security thing, right? Man, in 2018, they should have done that for Tesla. Like, not to say the government are nationalizing places, but if you thought that electric vehicles were the future, which they are, and if you thought manufacturing in America was important, which it was and is, you should have backed a national champion. Instead of, you know, getting Tesla to try to find international governments willing to give it a lifeline. So I think in hindsight, that's going to people can look at that and see that was a big mistake by the US government. And this is like in 2018, before there's all this animosity between Elon and the government, right?
Which is really, do you know what the scale difference is between BYD and the... So you said it stands for Beyond Your Dreams?
Yeah.
I mean, incredible name. I mean, just I'm going to keep my mouth shut, but that is a hilarious name. That's beautiful.
Not bad, right?
Beautiful. Yeah. It's kind of, so Tesla, BYD, and then you got...
But BYD, so I don't say BYD manufactures at the lower end. So I mentioned earlier about Tesla, right? Like we were talking about Leo.
It started
the
Leo premium. It's like Uber
Model S,
Black,
yeah.
Uber X.
Model S, Y.
Yeah.
And then the point was to get down to this $20,000-$25,000 price point. So the next step for Elon and Tesla was to get to the $25,000 car. But there's this big article in Reuters, which Elon disputed, that said, because of competition from BYD, like BYD is manufacturing, selling $10,000 to $15,000 cars globally. Not in America, because they're going to tariff and tax the shit out of it. And Europe too. And to be quite honest, there's like two sides to this. Is, are you going to trade war stuff? I'll be very frank. Is like, China is not playing fair with their industries. They haven't. This is recognized. Like, they give
in what way?
So they'll give cheap loans to their manufacturers. Like, they'll manufacture at losses. Like, solar industry is the most famous example of this. They basically will make it. It's not a capitalist system. It's not about making a profit. It's about, can we dominate and get market share in this category?
Which is what happens. Sounds a bit like VC-backed companies to me. It sounds like DoorDash and Uber.
At a nation-state level,
yeah,
right?
Of course. Yeah.
No, but I mean, it's quite similar.
You get the market share, and then later you can extract value from it. But maybe in their case, I mean, theirs is not just about extracting value money. It's national security, it's power, and, you know,
exactly,
position politically.
So BYD, it gets cheap loans from the government, gets land at pennies on the dollars. So like in any other competitive way, they're getting picked and chosen, right? And the idea that globalization in and of itself is good, I mean, that thing cracked in 2016 when Trump was elected. His election was partially the idea that, oh, wait, we outsource all these middle America jobs from 1990 through 2015. Yeah, we got cheap stuff at Walmart, but we completely gutted middle America and lost all manufacturing capacity. So yeah,
it's kind of like when we talk about getting a stimmy check, but then you go to a grocery store at Thanksgiving and you're like, why is a turkey three times the price or whatever?
Exactly.
There's an
right?
invisible it's, tax, and there's a long-term trade-off for short-term
100%.
Gain.
You nailed it.
And to be fair, at globalization level, that's a very complex thing. It's not like you can just know going in, this is how it's going to play out.
You lifted 500 million Chinese out of poverty, right?
Yeah, completely.
So there are certainly benefits. But I think the problem with the globalist perspective, and listen, I was drinking the Kool-Aid through university. I was a dumbass, right? You know what I mean? We probably had similar instincts. It's like, you don't even think about the downsides, right? All you're seeing is cheaper stuff, right? Like good manufactured goods at a reasonable price. That's all you're seeing. And to wrap this all, so BYD is a major competitor. And you have to think about Europe, right? You think about Volkswagen, which is a third owned by the German government. You think about all these legacy manufacturers in Europe that do internal combustion engine cars, that have massive unions and massive tens of thousands of people labor forces. If everyone's transitioning to electric vehicles for these climate goals, and because that's the future that everybody's seeing, they're going to get clapped by China. And we're being very honest, Tesla is the only other player in the world that will be able to compete electric vehicle scale. So fast forward, this brings us to the robo-taxi. Now, again, we're going to miss the earnings call that Tesla is doing, but Elon did already say that they plan on August 8th to tease the robo-taxi. Now, the robo-taxi is exactly what it sounds like. The Waymo, blah, you know the Waymo car, yeah? So what's the Waymo self-driving car?
Yeah, it's
car?
The
what
self-drive. It's the robo taxi equivalent, right?
Yeah.
It's self-driving, and I guess the hope is that people would use it instead of a taxi driving you. Similar Uber.
Or Uber, gonna, right?
Yeah. Is Uber using the same thing, right? Aren't they using
Waymo?
Uber, or they got their own
Uber,
version. Oh, sorry,
Uber
they took engineers
the
from there. They took engineers from there, no?
Yeah, right. So they shut down their self-driving business.
Okay.
But now you can actually order in where the cities that have a Waymo, you can order it.
San Francisco, I think, has it.
Yeah,
no?
San Francisco, exactly.
So you can order. So there's no driver, and you can go take the self-driving car.
So you've probably seen the viral videos of like idiot people in San Francisco just destroying these cars. But the whole point is like a total Luddite behavior, right? But
right, I thought you were about to say idiots using Waymo, and I was cracking up.
I'll tell my self-driving experience, and like I was blown away. But like, not to say there aren't concerns. Of course there are. But so, competitively, Tesla wants to get down to the BYD level, right? Or BYD kind of beat Tesla to that low price point. And So, and Tesla spent a lot of energy putting the Cybertruck out, right? So, which is obviously not a low price point vehicle. That's still in the 50,000-60,000 range. But still, like, I think that'll be an interesting play long term. Elon himself says that won't be meaningful to the revenue for a number of years, maybe until they ramp up. But strategically, this is where Tesla's at. The EV adoption is kind of actually slowed. And a lot of the legacy automakers, GM, Ford, Toyota, their EV efforts have not been super successful.
Sorry, just to clarify, when you say slowed, are you saying the growth is slowed or is it not even growing? Do you know
both lines? Growth is slowing. Wow. The EV adoption pickup is slowing.
But is it negative growth?
I don't think it's negative, but it's not the high growth industry that like Tesla was hitting 20-30% growth.
And
they're about to report, I believe, 5-10%.
And isn't that also just a function of as you get bigger, the numbers get bigger, it becomes harder to grow at that
exactly.
scale?
But the problem people are seeing is that even EVs are still only less than 10% of all cars, right? It's like, why are you slowing down at this point? It's not like you've already made 50%.
Yeah, it's not like
cars.
You're the 70% market share and now you're
exactly
Google search or something like that.
I think there's a couple issues with it. Two issues that are very salient is an issue with EVs is because since the battery makes up 30-40%, maybe more, say 50% of the vehicle cost, if you get in an accident and the battery's damaged, you got to replace the entire vehicle. Like the replacement cost is so instant. You see what I mean? Like if you're in a bad accident, the battery's
fixing the bumper here. This is like a serious
exactly
thing,
right.
You're basically getting a new car almost.
And the basic thing with these batteries is that you can have that type of damage, like the car's done damage with like not even that crazy of an accident. So there's that part of it. That means the insurance cost goes up. So these are all these ancillary things that we're not seeing, right? Off the top line, you're seeing EVs as, you save on gas. But here are the negatives. The other thing that was an issue,
the
obviously,
distance
the charging
as
networks.
Well. Also the distance, how far you can go. Has that ever been a problem for you or not really?
It is because a charging network in Canada is not that great. But the charging network.
So just to clarify for people who don't know, like I don't know how many miles they can go.
Yeah, it's like you get
about, you're doing a road trip across America, you probably don't want to do in a Tesla.
Well, actually Tesla's fine in America because there's so many superchargers.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it takes longer though, right? Like when you go plug it in, it takes half an hour or something versus like 2 minutes at a gas
station. Yeah. A full charge takes about 20 minutes. But I mean, like when you do, people have done many road trips across America with Teslas. They have a very robust charging network. But to charge, it is a bit longer. But the thing is, if you're doing a charging network, you're usually sitting in these, if you're doing a road trip across country, you're sitting in these gas station stops for 20 minutes.
Yeah, you're
anyways.
In McDangles hitting the hash brown.
You're McDangles. You're taking a dump. You're doing the whole nine, right? Right. Range anxiety is a concern. I think a lot less in America, if we're being honest. But Canada, the charging network's getting better. But these are the whole reason we bring this up is reasons why people are hesitant about pickup, right?
So how do you feel about robotaxi before we talk about self-driving for you? Like,
so I'm talking about it.
Yeah.
This is the issue. The negative that people are saying about robotaxi is this. How long will it take for a true self-driving to be there where cities would allow this? This is a regulatory question, right? And can Tesla manufacture these robotaxis at scale? So something I'd point people to is the Bill Gurley, Brett Gerstner podcast, BG2. Very good podcast, legendary investors. They talk about the economics. So Bill Gurley, earlier investor in Uber. They walk through the economics of a robotaxi network. So what I will say is this. This is a multi-year bet, right, on Tesla. After me using self-driving, I think that future is coming. And I say I think it's coming because they made a big change to full self-driving where, let me ask Bob, do you understand how Waymo works? Like, do you understand how it's self-driving?
I just know there's like the 3D radar thing or whatever. And I've seen some videos of it. And I've seen even in Tesla, I've seen some videos of how that looks. But
I'll show the
I don't
big
know
difference.
Too much.
Okay, yeah. The big debate in self-driving is LiDAR versus vision. LiDAR is a laser that you're referring to. That spinning thing on the top of Waymo, is it shooting out lasers into the
environment? That's a Tesla's vision, no?
Tesla's 100% camera vision now. And the argument's always been, should you do LiDAR, should you do vision, or should you do both? LiDAR is shooting out lasers, it's bouncing back, and it's recreating the environment for you. LiDAR, though, is expensive because you got to have that LiDAR machine, right? Elon's making a bet that AI is advancing at such a pace that it can all be vision. My experience with self-driving on Tesla, there's 7 cameras, back, front, sides. They're going all vision. Elon's like, humans drive with eyes, cars should be able to drive with vision. I'm telling you right now, it's 95%. But the whole point with self-driving is it's all the edge cases, right? That's the whole point with cars. You can get 95%.
It seems like more of the discussion is more about cost for them though, no? Because in an ideal world, you have both and you optimize for safety and you get best of both worlds. But at the moment, that would be cost prohibitive.
Exactly. It's cost prohibitive to roll out a robo-taxi fleet. A Waymo car is about $80,000 to $100,000 per car right now. Elon wants to sell robo-taxis at $25,000. But here's the key. People think that Elon's choosing the robo-taxi vision because it's probably like narrative-wise, it is more sexy from an investor standpoint. And then they're thinking that he's choosing that over the $25,000 accessible vehicle because BYD has already been saturating that market. What people don't understand is this. The robo-taxi market is going to be the same frame as the $25,000 car market. So if Elon's pumping out millions of robo-taxis a year in the GigaPress in Austin, say, for example, that assembly line is going to be usable for the $25,000 car. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. They can use it
for
both.
So the volume-wise, but then the question becomes then, how many years until $25,000 car? How many years until robo-taxi? That's what people are asking. So
this is just old school unit economic curve here, right?
100%, dude.
And
you nailed it.
When can you get to economies of scale that it makes sense? Plus, I guess, will they be manufacturing? And yeah, I don't know their plans around other people using that technology too. Or does everyone have to replicate their own version of this? Or is there a world where they become the kind of leader in doing that for everyone?
That's a great question, man. I'm going to ping you with data. And I just want you literally to give me your MBA 101 analysis because you nailed it. It is a unit economic question. So right now, they have 1 billion miles driven with computer vision. With AI, specifically vision, it's a data game, right? And you're trying to get edge cases. So we'll talk about full self-drive. I'll tell you my experience so far. About 3 weeks ago, Tesla made available to most cars full self-driving. It was just airdrop. Software update. It was
that's
insane.
That's incredible, isn't it? Yeah,
I had
that's
full
incredible.
Self-driving on my Model 3. Just one day, I woke up and I got an email.
So is there everyone who has that? Is there like a version of the car you need? Because you know when you get
there
it,
is a version, but
I'm
pretty sure. So I have a 2020. So I'm pretty sure 2019. Oh, my brother has a 20. Yeah, my brother's 2019 Model 3 and it works. So basically this point.
I love the fan family is just smashing Teslas
supporting.
Throughout. There you
a
go.
Large majority of these cars are on the road. And what they're doing is they're collecting data, right? Initially, full self-driving. The name is not great, if we're being honest. I wouldn't say the name's not great. The name is, they call it full self-driving, but supervised in brackets.
It's almost.
Which is a bit confusing, right?
Yeah. Almost full service, yeah.
So, but anyways, at this point, people just call it FSD. And
at what point, when you use this, did you use your hands for the steering wheel at all? What was the situation?
No, you have to. You have to put your hand on the steering wheel.
Got it.
If your hand's not on the steering wheel, screen blinks and just basically yells at you.
Got it.
So
okay.
It knows. And if you're not looking, there's a camera in the car. So, I mean, you could choose to have it like you can put that, you know, the slider, whether or not you want the camera on. The camera knows if you're looking at the road or not. So there's been a part guilty where I wasn't focused. I was like probably like looking what podcast I want to listen to. It makes a sound. It tells you. It's like,
yeah.
So you get warned if your hand's on the steering wheel. You get warned if you're not looking at the road. There's security in place. You're supposed to have your hand on the steering wheel. And I'll be honest, like, I see a lot of these videos where people don't do it at all. I'm like, listen, you're just, at that point, you're just tempting fate. Like, use your brain.
Yeah, an experimental thing.
Use your brain,
careful,
right?
Yeah.
It's like, don't be a hero. But I'll turn it on. It navigates. You put in navigation. It'll just take you there, man. So I'll break it down. Let's walk through it. Before
what about
we
parking?
About
sorry. Is that?
Yeah. It parks. It's crazy.
Pretty well.
It parks pretty well. Because of you? I'll tell you this right now.
Because that's probably it, because it's angles and it's space. Bro,
it does parallel parking better than 99% of people I've seen out there.
Oh, yeah. It definitely does it better than me because, yeah.
So let me list some things off for you. And I think you'll be able to understand this as a driver. The number one, I think, hurdle to adoption with the FSD outside of regulatory bodies is this. And the argument that we all know is 45,000 people die in car crashes a year. A lot happens because of drunk driving. A lot happens at night. People are just not good drivers, man. And like being on your phone is as bad attention-wise as being drunk in a lot of situations. People are dangerous drivers. We know this. This is my experience. This is my top-level takeaway, full self-driving. If every single person tomorrow had an FSD Tesla on the road, the world would be infinitely safer. But that's just not how it's going to happen. And the reality is that people drive like maniacs and they don't follow the rules. Or they follow
they're on
the
their
rules.
Phone, they're texting, they're on their doing phone, all, they're drinking,
they don't follow
driving,
the speed
they're
limit,
smoking, all
they don't
sorts
follow
of stuff.
Stop signs, they yeah. don't follow the rules of the road. So 99.9% of people don't do those things. The problem is this, these FSD vehicles are following the rules to the T. So like, I will be coming up to a stop and it will do a full stop. Wow, you've driven. When you do a stop sign, what do? You do the rolling stop, right? You
yeah,
do the taxi
I mean,
stop.
Yeah. Depends where it is, but yeah.
But you know what I mean? So those things are happening. So it's a social thing. So when I'm in FSD and the car stops six or like a foot before the stop line, like I have people looking at me funny. You see what I'm saying? It's a social thing.
Yeah, there's it's like this, it's humans getting used to something different, right?
Yeah, it's like things that they aren't used to people following the rules so closely.
Yeah.
So there's that this like, sense. When I'm letting FSD go, there's like this, like I feel it weird because it's actually following the rules of the road. And that is the biggest hiccup to me because I'll often disengage the car when I'm following the rules because I'm so used to not following them by the T. The second thing I want to mention, well, I'll just mention a whole body bullet point of like the edge cases. So, but I'll say a couple of things that you'll probably experience as a driver. And I'm going to highlight these because FSD passed them for me. And if I'm being fully honest, when I let FSD make these decisions, you're rolling into it and you're just like, ooh, you're just kind of like, you're letting it do it. And you're waiting to see what you see what I'm saying? So a couple of things, roundabouts. UK got a lot of roundabouts, don't they? So you rolled up in a roundabout, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
You know that feeling. So I let FSD handle a couple roundabouts for me in
really?
Vancouver.
Okay.
Nailed them.
Wow.
Nailed
okay.
them. I'm like, impressive.
The and other so it thing, just knows where you're going based on navigation, right? So it knows
yeah, it
we're taking
navigation.
A third exit, whatever. Okay.
Well, I love that you brought up that, though, we're going to navigation. The navigation actually is another hurdle for me because humans, when you're driving, like, you know what the navigable route is, but if you spot an opening, you're like, oh, traffic's coming. I'm going to take this left turn first just because, you know, I'm going to be there 30 seconds earlier. Rerouting is not precise, just for anything in general.
Yeah.
So I'd say that was another hiccup for me where, like, even though in the aggregate, I'm saving, like, 2 seconds,
yeah.
I like to, you know, you want to be in control.
You're playing the game there, yeah.
You're like, oh, yo, this left turn opened up. I'm going to snag this.
Yeah.
That's a thing that FSD won't have because you can't change the route quickly, right? Or that quickly. But
wait, what about, because you got the control with the steering wheel, though. So can you not override it by...
It's instant overriding. You flick the way it doesn't have the clutch in the bottom, you use the ticker on the right. So literally it just goes up. Or what you do is you just make a hard tug on the steering wheel.
And so if that's the case, would that not help you with the quick change of whatever you wanted to change and then
it
re-navigates?
It's instant. Like
Got
you
it,
can
okay.
disengage instantly. It takes half a second. It's all it is a new muscle memory thing. Like it's easier than driving a manual or clutch, right? So disengaging is not hard at all. That's the other part of it. But the question where I mentioned earlier, they used to sell FSD as a package, like 10,000 off the bat. Now you can subscribe to it. It's a 99% margin subscription for Tesla. So the question goes, would it be willing to pay for this? Listen, I pay subscriptions to the dumbest shit in the world. This is useful. Like I'm happy to pay $99 a month for FSD because sometimes I just don't feel like driving. I'll hit the highway and I'll just flick on. I mean, they have lane control already, but FSD on highways, it does really well. So you don't have to make as many decisions, right?
So can I ask, in the future, is there idea for this to be fully self-driving so you don't even have to keep your hands on the steering wheel?
That's the idea. Well, let's get to the robotaxi. The robotaxi is not going to have a steering wheel. That's the idea.
Because it doesn't even have a steering wheel. Whereas Waymo does have a steering wheel, I think, right? Or do they not?
I don't even know if Waymo has a steering wheel. That's a great question. But the idea with the robotaxi, which again, would be many years away for regulatory and manufacturing reasons, there is no steering wheel. It is literally going to be a robotaxi. I can see this rollout happening. Places like Dubai with very, crisscross streets, like straight lines, not
and
like Europe,
Ford
right?
thinking like they want to invest in this sort of stuff. They want to say, look, we're doing this sort of thing.
Exactly. Like, bro, you've been to Florence. You can't just drop a bunch of robo-taxis in Florence.
That's, isn't that the craziest thing? I mean, this could be a whole trunk thread here about even like New York, Manhattan streets, right? It's a grid versus, you know, London or anywhere in Europe. It's good. It was made before cars, right? So they
were
very different setup there.
So the last thing I'll say about, let me wrap it up with all this. FSD has gotten so, like, I never used it before FSD 12, the new version, which is computer vision. They've had a breakthrough in their learning models. And apparently they have an even bigger breakthrough, which they haven't rolled out yet. So to answer your question about will there be a steering wheel, the idea with robotaxi is there will not be a steering wheel. But then at that point, you have to reach full, like level 5 self-driving. And before using this, I wouldn't say I was skeptical. I just didn't have an opinion. After using it, I find it inevitable that Tesla will crack this. The hurdles will be humans. Like everything I mentioned, it's like feeling awkward that a car is following the rules of the road, like as screwed up as that sounds, right? It's like, I feel awkward at a stop sign because I'm not inching ahead.
Yeah.
Right? There's that human element.
It's that, you've been doing this for a long time and it's a new behavior.
Yeah. Even though it's correct, it feels awkward. There's that part. And that's a reality. There's a regulatory side of which municipalities will allow it, right? Like you said, maybe New York would make sense. Crisscross streets, mayhem on the road. And can you reduce transportation?
That's the thing. I'll say they got the crisscross streets, but we got a lot of people doing interesting things. So maybe that isn't the case. But I mean, like you said, Dubai or somewhere like that could be interesting. Or I forgot. I've been to Singapore, but a long time ago. I forgot what the streets are like there, but I could see something like that as well. But
so let me roll off of this.
Yeah,
I think FSD has a future because I'll be very honest with you. I was blown away by it. It was like Chat GPT like for physical world. I'm like, I cannot believe. I told my wife, I'm like, do you realize that I literally just clicked this clutch twice and this thing drove our son to school?
How does she feel about you doing it? Does she have many? Because as someone who isn't following technology as much as you are, I'm assuming, though I don't know her.
She tried it. She likes it.
So that's another interesting thing because most people, like obviously you're early adopter with most of these sorts of things, but if you speak to your parents or someone who's not, following it as closely as you are, most of them are like, oh my God, I'd never let a computer drive me, right? Like that's normally the first thing. And then I was the same until I like learned a bit more about it. And then the first pushback is always, well, do you know your plane is basically doing the same thing? It's pretty much self-driving. And you have the pilot there with the hands on a wheel and they do some things, but a lot of it is done by computers too. And so I think that is the, like you said, regulation is a big part of this. But another thing is just the education of people. And to be honest, also fulfilling the promises, right? Because right now it is at 95% versus 99.9, which is, it needs to get to that level before people feel comfortable doing it at scale. So definitely interesting, man. So is there anything that before we move on to Drake, just in terms of the robotaxi stuff, anything else there?
Yeah, I'll just add the unit economics, as you mentioned it, is Bill Gurley said the following. He's like, obviously the big part of Uber is labor, right? Like that's the biggest cost for an Uber trip is you're paying the driver X amount of the fare, right? And the whole thesis around why you mentioned that Uber had a self-driving business was like, oh, if we get rid of drivers, it's all margin, right? But Bill Gurley brought up a couple points, or Brad Kushner on their podcast. and some things that we kind of touched on. If you had a, let's say that Uber ruled out Tesla's, or Tesla started its own fleet of robo-taxis, couple issues. The insurance costs would eat into the cost savings. So without having labor, let's say you get the 50% margin back, you're going to lose some of that for insurance. And then let's, and to roll out the fleet, yes, you have to buy
a few lawsuits thrown in there.
Exactly, right? Yeah. But I think the math they ended up crunching, and this is all super speculative, but they're like, versus an Uber, a robo-taxi fleet has 20 to 30% absolute number better margin. Like if an Uber margin, I don't know what it is, a ballpark call 30, 40%, like a Tesla robo-taxi would be in the 50, 60 range. And the thing about Tesla is if it gets to the world where the FSD gets better, and I there's no reason why, based on the amount of training data they're getting, I don't think they'll reach it. And if you could, if I could turn my Model 3 into a robo-taxi and just flick it on, they have millions of people have the app. So that Tesla app could become competitive with Uber.
So, and just that, that's the vision, right? That owners of Teslas can then turn them into basically self-driving taxis and you earn.
This is separate from the robo-taxi. This is like taking my Model 3 and turning it into a taxi. Wow. But like Tesla wants to manufacture millions at this different body. Yeah.
So, but you would also be able to put that on the road and that would also bring
in the network.
Wow, that's so pretty incredible.
You see what I'm saying? Is like, I mean, this is it, right? This is... Tesla is a competitive disadvantage, but Elon, he says, the terminology now is ball to the wall on autonomy. And I see it. Like, I didn't have an opinion on FSD and a robotaxi before I used this. To me, it feels inevitable now. Not saying that there aren't hurdles, but I experienced it. And I'm like, oh, this is like, this is so clear the future. This is so clear the future.
I think the question now for... like separating the genius of that and how good that is valuation or the boring number stuff really, right? Of like, and competitors and like, and, you know, even the company we just spoke about, I forgot, the Chinese company.
BYD.
Exactly. If they're going to end up having stuff like that, that could also be exported here. I don't know the details.
Tesla's got that. The thing, if their advantage before was manufacturing the bodies of the car, which they may have lost, or that edge, their advantage now is the data. We talked about for past year. What is the advantage in AI? It's data.
Yeah.
No one has more vision data than Tesla. It's not even close. They're in a world of their own.
Yeah.
And so anyways, not investment advice, just giving my firsthand experience with FSD.
Very cool. Cool. That. So you literally just tried this. When did you try this, by the way?
It's probably 3 to 4 weeks now.
Oh, so it's recent. So you're still using it though, right?
Still using it. I'm going to pay for the subscription.
That's awesome. All right, perfect. Thanks for breaking that down. Talking of AI, let's talk about Drake versus Kendrick Lamar. Have you been following this rap beef, Trunk? Because I know you're a music fan.
Can you tee the listeners up about what's happening?
Yeah, I was going to say, I've only seen a little bit, but just obviously people who are fans of the music know the classics, Biggie versus Tupac, Nas versus Jay-Z. There's a bunch of 50 Cent Ja Rule. Remember that one back in the day?
That was
funny. 50 Cent and anyone is funny because he's hilarious.
G-Unit versus Murder, Inc.
Exactly.
Classic.
And so Kendrick, and honestly, I haven't even been following it fully, but Kendrick Lamar, Drake, and J. Cole, they're the three that have been involved with this most recently. You know, arguably the three biggest rappers, they pretty much are in today's world. And so they've been going back and forth at each other. But Drake now got involved and I think he's dropped 2 songs. Is that right?
Yeah.
There was a first one where he said, "You're my son" or something, which was hilarious.
It's called, here, let me tee it up. Can you mention some of it?
Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar dropped a line on Future's, a song by Future.
That's
Future's
okay,
a big collaborator with Drake. And it looked like he took a shot at Drake. I don't know what the beef is. I don't go that far, but I did go about a month far. You'd mention it. Drake dropped a track called, I think it's called Push It Up or Push Up. And people actually weren't sure. He didn't claim right away that was him. So people thought, oh, this might actually just be AI, which is weird, right? And then over the weekend, which is what Bilal was losing his mind over.
This is funny, yeah.
Can you
Taylor
tell us?
Taylor Made, right? Yeah. So we can play
Taylor
it,
Made
fact.
Freestyle. Yeah, why don't
Should
we play
Should we just play
it?
A little bit? I've got a TikTok video of someone reacting to it. That's the closest I've got.
Hit it.
Let me share the screen here.
I'll tease it for the listeners that haven't heard it yet. Drake disses Kendrick by using AI raps from Snoop and Tupac. Go ahead.
Which is, and for people who don't know, Kendrick is from the West Coast.
Yeah.
So this is, and it sounds like a Dr. Dre style beat too. So it's all about, you know, and it's called Tailor Made, which is about, you know,
reference to Taylor Swift.
Exactly. So you, let's just play a few seconds so we can get a sense. Does rise again. You can see it in my eyes again. Nick, is that Tupac? It's very... I mean, come on. Look, this guy is already doing it.
No, Drake can't do that.
All right, we get the idea, right? So he's doing this.
Yeah, pause it.
There's a Snoop line on there. Then he comes in, starts talking about you're not replying because it's Taylor Swift's album release. It's funny. You can go listen to the full
what
version.
What was your reaction give me your reaction when you heard this song.
I was like, oh my, well, I just think it's interesting. I mean, obviously, music-wise, it's interesting already, but the fact they're using AI here is very interesting too, because we've had the discussion on the pod around what is the use of AI, the pros and cons for music specifically, and this is just such a smart use of it, right? Like, obviously, Tupac's not around, and for him to be able to diss Kendrick with, you know, one of the greats from the West Coast is just a really smart play on the whole thing. So yeah, I thought it was great, and I'm obviously a fan of both of them, but yeah, this is like up there. This is a really good smart move from Drake.
Let me jump in with a couple of thoughts. So last year, you remember when we did the episode about the AI Drake and Weeknd song?
Oh yeah
by the guy Ghost.
Banger. Yeah,
that was it. That was also a Chat GPT-esque moment. That was up there with a Pope coat, right? When we're like, oh, this is the audio version.
Yeah.
When the Pope, the visual of the Pope code. So this was, Drake dropped this, Bilal, on the 1 year anniversary of that.
Oh,
this
man.
Guy is no dummy.
And he's on tour, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is so, kind of incredible, yeah.
So Bilal had touched on a couple of lines. I mean, you mentioned Taylor Swift. This is what I call the Taylor Made Freestyle. So people have been asking, since Drake's first diss track, where's Kendrick's reply? And the Drake's second diss track, the one with the AI Tupac and the AI Snoop, insinuates that Kendrick isn't dropping a reply because his label, which is owned by UMG, the biggest record label in the world, they're telling Kendrick, yo, you can't drop nothing because Taylor Swift's new album's coming out. The Tortured Poets Society is coming out.
So good.
Drake's basically saying, you're getting owned. Literally, you're getting owned by your label. You can't even reply to me because Taylor is bigger than you. And he, at the end of this track, after Tupac's AI verse, Snoop's AI verse, and Drake sings his verse, we don't even know if it's AI or not. He goes, shout out to Taylor Swift, the biggest gangster in the music game.
That's incredible.
When her album dropped, I moved my album. And then he's just like, Kendrick, where's your reply? I know you'll win that New York studio. He goes, this is the line that killed me. Drake goes, we're waiting for you, Kendrick. I know you're working on some quintuple entendre, some shit I ain't even ever heard of. Yeah. I'm waiting for you. Dude.
You have to look that word up there.
Dude, I had to look at, he bodied Kendrick so hard. The other part where he bodied him was, you'd set up top that, not only are Tupac and Snoop the ancestors in terms of West Coast rap to Kendrick. In 2011, you probably remember this, famously Snoop Dogg on stage with Corrupt the Game and Dr. Dre in attendance said, Kendrick, we're passing you the torch. You're the new West Coast king. Pass them the torch. In the song itself, Drake references the passing of the torch to troll him. Also in the song, Drake references everything that Kendrick could diss Drake about. So big running storyline.
He did the Eminem, you know, we've talked about
the
it before.
Eminem, yeah, exactly. The 8 Mile, like, I'm going to tell you everything you're going to diss me about so you can't diss me, right? Genius. Go ahead.
Incredible, yeah. No, I mean, how proud are you as a Canadian here on Drake's behalf?
Drizzy, the six. repping the six.
I mean, now, you have to say Drake really, I mean, all jokes aside, outside of music, whatever you like his music or you don't, obviously, I mean, we all like his music. The fact that he's been on top of the game for this long is pretty incredible. Like the longevity is 2024. How long has he been around? 2008, was it? Okay. I mean, when was the motto song? What do you guys, you know, with the photo? Do you remember that? Let me look it up. How long has he been around? I mean, actually top of the game vibes though. He's because, you know, Kanye had his era, you know, before that there's Eminem, 50 Cent, like all that stuff. But Drake's been really just topping it for a long time. It's pretty incredible.
No, and he's so, I mean, we've talked about it, blah. How, like, he creates memes, right? Like the baby mama meme, him sitting on top of
CN Tower, the music video where he was doing the stupid dancing. Yeah.
What was the one? Hotline Bling.
Oh my God.
Dude, he creates videos to get memes.
He can make fun of himself.
Exactly. And he is so culturally aware. But I have to, like, there's so much controversy around AI and music, understandably. He's like, screw it. I'm just going to take this mantle. I just created the most famous AI song ever. He did, right? He did. This is the most famous AI song. And I mean, there's a lot of questions around, did he speak with the estate of Tupac Shakur? It sounds like he did. I mean, but otherwise,
actually, my girlfriend asked that. She was like, you know, we were saying, what does that process even look like, right? Like, there's not precedent for this before.
Well, it's a hologram. The Tupac hologram,
yeah, yeah, that's true.
So
that's
there's
true.
Like, there is,
but then Snoop is a different one because, like, Snoop's still around and he's
Snoop
West Coast.
Put out a video, bro.
What did he say?
He said, "Yo, my phone was blown up last night. Everybody's saying," he didn't mention the song out by Runya, but he knew what he was talking about. He's like, "Oh man," they're like, "What is this? Is it fake?" And he goes, "Maybe." And he goes, "Maybe not." And then he,
oh my god, oh, I didn't see that.
And then shows Death Row Record. So, like, there's a couple of lines for people to remember. Tupac and Snoop were the most famous artists on Death Row Records. And that Drake wrote these verses that the AI sang. Two of the references about House of Blues. So the House of Blues is the famous place on the Sunset Strip. I'm sure Melina knows it. House of Blues, Sunset Strip, famous music. Tupac and Snoop. Tupac's last performance was on July 4th, 1996 at Sunset Strip, House of Blues. And in the AI version of him in this diss track, he mentions him and Snoop. He was shirtless singing Two of America's Most Wanted. Unbelievable.
You were loving this, right?
Dude, loving it.
Because when was the last time it was? Because this is new school. Very interesting. But I mean, obviously, we were pretty young for the Tupac Biggie stuff, but we kind of still followed it.
The last one this big
almost was
probably Jay-Z, Nas. You remember Jay-Z, Nas?
Yeah, oh, mad. Yeah. Oh, I mean, Aoife. Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah, dude. That was probably the last time.
I don't know how old you were then, but like, I remember that coming out and being like, oh my God, I can't believe
this. Because there's
goats,
right? So like, when you saw Kendrick and Drake, you're like, oh, these two are the biggest hitters in rap, right? And the last thing I'll say is this. When Drake acknowledged that he did the push-up diss track, he released the song. And you know what the visual was? It was Kendrick's shoe size.
Oh, that was incredible. Yeah, someone was showing me this weekend.
I think
weekend
Kendrick's
that.
Shoe
oh
size
God.
Is 7 or 8.
So
listen,
good.
If you're a man and you buy shoes, you get the insinuation here.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's incredible. That's
Kendrick's
incredible.
Kendrick's like 5'5 or 5'6, right?
Man. He's not messing around with that. That
Drake,
was good.
Drake, absolute. You know, we can skip
he bodied him here.
Yeah, we
yeah,
bought
yeah,
it.
Okay, let's skip the Taylor Swift
let's
for
do the
now.
AMA.
But I will say, Taylor Swift album, 30 songs, incredible. Have you listened to any of the album?
I haven't.
I started listening to a little bit with the missus at home. 7 songs. I'm not going to lie, pretty good. They got Post Malone in it, track number 1. I need to hear the whole thing, but respect. I'm not really a big Taylor Swift fan. Like, I mean, I respect her, but this is the first time I was like, oh, I actually really kind of like some of the songs. So let's do a couple of the AMAs and then bounce from here. This has been a good episode. Thanks for everyone for sharing those. Hope you enjoyed the normal segments. Let's bang out some of these.
Yeah,
so
quick ones.
Let's see here. There's a few around the topics that we choose. So I kind of grouped them here. Chris McCoy said, when NIA live, which we'll get to. Chris Twining said, or Twining, sorry if I'm saying your surname.
Oh yeah, Chris, homie, man. What's up, Chris?
Yeah, legend. He's very active in the Telegram. He said, given that you guys have considered live episodes, similar to what Chris is asking, explore deep dive episodes, etc., what different types of format would you like to explore over the next 300 episodes? I'm just going to add the last question, which is related. Perrin asked, do you guys ever have disagreements on content and topics? How do you resolve this? So it's kind of around like, one, what sort of topics do we want to cover and formats? And then two, how do we kind of choose? Someone else asked, like, how do you guys choose topics every week? So maybe we just actually answer that quickly because it's kind of quick.
No, let's, these two questions. I'm going to ask you specifically.
Yeah.
Wow. Next 300, what would you like to do?
I think it kind of, there was another question which asked like, what keeps us doing this every week? So the answer is
related. Let's answer those three questions. That'll be our AMA.
Yeah, because they're kind of related. The reason I bring that up is because they're all related, because the reason we keep doing this every week is because we enjoy doing it, right? So every week we turn up, it gives us energy, we're hanging with the boys. I get to learn stuff every week. Hopefully you guys do as well. And we just bring the energy. And so for me, as long as that is still going and it's fun for us and it doesn't take up, you know, exponential amount of time that is difficult for us to commit to, we will keep doing it, right? So that's kind of how we do that. On the topic side and the format, that is we're not really stuck in our ways with that. Like, I think we have tested a few different things. We did the single topic ones. We did AMAs, we do quite regularly. And then we do our regular
big guest.
Exactly. Get a big guest. Exactly. So for me, I kind of like the variety of it, but I do think long term, even in the last 6 months, the last year, we've honed in on this is our format, right? Like most people are coming here because they want to know kind of what's going on latest in business and tech, but then we're providing it in a fun enough way. Right. So that's kind of the main format. But my thing is always like, you got to balance like what people want with what we want, because ultimately a big part of this is us having fun and that transmits to people. So if we're coming in talking about what we think people want, but we're not actually enjoying it, it won't work. So yeah, that's kind of the balance, is just we're naturally following our curiosity. We have a group chat. We share links. We share memes. And we kind of know, okay, like the Costco gold one is perfect, right? Like it's funny, but it's also kind of interesting that they're like this massive retailer doing it. And I'll say Trung does a lot of this. Like Trung is obviously incredibly curious, finding all sorts of stuff, writing about stuff. So he brings a lot of these to the table. But yeah, what about you, man? Are there any types of formats and topics you'd want to cover more?
I think the thing to talk about is how we pick topics, and you touched on it. There had definitely been a bit of an evolution, right? Like when we got together and started doing this in 2021, it was very much around crypto. And watching Jack and yourself participate in that.
That wasn't necessary, real quick. That wasn't necessarily the premise of the show. It just naturally became that.
It was what popped off. Yeah.
Popped off, that was to what mindshare wise. I'm not saying because people listen.
100%.
Yeah.
What I would say is this, is like that did dominate the first year, because that was, like you said, that was the Twitter feed.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's what was popping off. And then what I would say about year two was, as you know, we got a bit of a bigger audience. We're like, let's start snagging guests, because that's how you grow. That's how we started thinking. There definitely was a point where we're like, let's try to actually take this to the next level, which in that time meant literally just a bigger audience, right? And not even saying the quality of the audience, whether or not we wanted to do it. There's definitely a period where all we cared about was snagging big guests. Like, obviously, snagging Sailor was the biggest running joke, right?
Yeah.
And we did get Sailor, and that was a great
combo. I would say, personally, that was growth a little bit, but it was also just because it was kind of a fun thing to experiment with.
Yeah,
I still do like having a guest once in a while.
And we've interviewed like a big person. I was like, you've done it on the Creative Lab. I've done it previously myself. It's like, it's all like, it's what I don't like about the podcast game, that part of it, is I know a lot of people just interview. All they want to do is get a big guest, a big name, for the sake of getting it. The conversation can be shit. They just want pure clout. I mean, dude, you understand.
Ego.
You've gone through this idea maze, right? Because you've experienced this in an interview show. And I think last year we just kind of basically decided, and Bilal actually brought this up a lot. I'm going to give Bilal credit for this. Because there was a period where, I do have a larger Twitter audience. I was getting hit up a lot by a lot of people to come on the podcast. And I'd offer up a lot of people. And Bilal would just be like, man, like, I'll be straight. Bilal was just like, I think people just enjoy it more when it's us three talking. And I've heard that too. And the super reality about guest podcasts is this. It's so competitive now. And if you can't do it in person and then have it properly filmed, that's just the bar now. Like,
yeah,
like the bar has been raised for guest podcasts.
Yeah.
Tim Ferriss is old school. Yeah, Tim Ferriss talks about this.
Yeah.
Tim Ferriss is like, I'm avoiding going on YouTube, even though I know it will hurt my future growth. I mean, it's already massive, but he's like, the next phase for me is to do a lot of live podcasting. But he's like, I've thought about it. That's just not what my podcast is. He says specifically that his podcast is better with no video. That's what he typically does. It's no video. So the other side feels super comfortable. And
I have some theories on this though.
Okay.
But
yeah,
I don't want to. No, because I have listened to him talk about this a lot. And, you know, I respect him for the most.
Hit me.
I think it's a multiple. I think he genuinely is at a stage where he can say no to video because, you know,
yeah,
he's already got a massive podcast. He's already great. He's doing financially well. And I do love that about him, that he optimizes for not just money, not just growth.
Lifestyle,
at the
right?
same time, he 100% has conflicting things about this because he has mentioned like on multiple different things where he's like, I do want to do it for growth. That was the main reason. And the truth is that is one of the biggest areas for him to potentially grow is on YouTube. I'll also say, this is my opinion, he kind of has a legacy by this point, in air quotes, legacy podcast audience, where the metrics for that are old school and he can still charge a bunch of money on ads based on that old way of doing things, which is to his benefit. And it works, right, for advertisers. So I'm not saying he does. He has a massive audience. As soon as you go to video and you then now have to grow that, there is a comparison of, oh, but you've only got X number of subscribers or views on video.
Yeah.
And like it makes it complicated, even on the money side of things. Secondly, he's talked about not wanting his face shown, which I respect.
Yeah,
he actually did a good episode, I think, with Noah Kagan, when Noah launched his book recently. And Noah's obviously gone, you probably know Noah, right?
Yeah.
And Noah's done a lot of stuff on YouTube, really doubled
Tons.
Down. And to be fair to Noah, he gave him some good ideas. He was like, oh, if you don't want your face to be shown, which is an understandable thing because Tim gets recognized in person a lot, and he doesn't want more of that, which I respect. He's like, you could also just do it, like focus on the guests and you can do video without doing that. Like, what's that rap guy, the one who does all the interviews when you don't even see his face? Do you know what I'm talking about?
That's not Narwhar, is it?
No, but there's a
No, you see Narwhar. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Anyway, so there are ways you can do it to optimize for that. So my personal opinion is I think he has a genuine thing around like he doesn't want his face to be seen and whatever. But I also think he's kind of in a position where he can do it. If he was a new person, he has
so
to do
massive,
it.
Right? He's already so massive.
Completely. And he's got
Fair
a massive
enough.
Email list. So he's killing it. But anyway,
so let me
back to what
quickly, just to what you're saying. I like that you did fill that out because that's a good, you steel man the other side. Steel man, what a word. But no, just going back to it is like, guests obviously are huge, right? And I'll be very honest. Like the past year, we've never taken on advertisers. Although shout out to healwithheat.com for hooking up Jack with that sauna. My boy, Nate at hooking up this Herman Miller gaming chair.
There we go.
But we just don't take, we don't shill. I mean, we'll shill our own shit, barely.ai. We'll shill our own stuff. But frankly, we haven't taken that seriously. We're being very honest.
I will say, honestly, on the guest thing though, just to clarify, I'm not against having guests. I always talked to George Mack last week after people were tweeting us saying, hey, you need to do an Oasis episode. He's down to do it, by the way. So I'm up for doing it. All I was saying is not just guests, everything. Like, I want the standard to be high. And so when us three do it, we know it generally works pretty well. And I think with guests, some of my favorite episodes have been with guests. So it's not that it can't work. We just want to make sure we go into it prepared, make sure we've got a good guest who suits the vibe. And so sometimes you don't know that until you do it as well. So I still think we should do more guests. In fact, we haven't done one for a while, so I'm up for doing that.
All right, fair enough. So basically, Bilal's throwing everything I'm saying right back in my dome.
No, I'm open to it.
No, it's good. I agree. So you're right. We should probably do more guests, actually. The other thing I was going to say is like, there is a bit of part of it is just like, schedule wise, all of us are a little bit busier and, I mean, if this was the main thing, we'd obviously take it to the next level, like Bilal said. But you know what? I think number one being, do we enjoy doing it every week? We still do. And number two thing, if we're talking about thinking about more strategically, I think just having this, I mean, if you talk about call it asset, it is an asset, right? It's like, or you know, we love you listeners coming every week and you know, jamming with us, listening with us. And we do respect your time, right? Like these topics, like Bilal said, they are, a lot of them, sometimes they are newsies. The majority right now, we're just trying to stay on top of the news cycle. And, you know, that might not be the long-term game for this. But just having this and having you guys come every week, that's important in and of itself, right? Literally that relationship.
Yeah, sometimes it's not about more, you know? Sometimes it is, you know, sometimes it's about, oh, this is something that works. We brings us happiness every week. Sounds cheesy, but that's what it is.
No, like, seriously, right?
Like we said, man, all of us have got stuff going on and we've been able to come every week and do this. So there's a reason for that, you know what I mean?
So like, I think that kind of answers how we pick topics. I'd say today, right now, is we are kind of like, literally the things that are interesting us in the cycle. And often it is news driven, but every now and then we will do something that's evergreen, which is typically from the AMA side. Like this is an AMA thing that we love talking about, right? And so that would be on the topic side.
Those topics that we did, sorry, you know, remember like the ideas that changed our lives?
Vibe? Yeah, the single ones.
People that was pretty, and that was pretty good too. I feel like we should experiment
we should
with
do
a
more
few
of those
more
also.
Of those.
Yeah.
And if you've got any suggestions for topics like that, would love your thoughts on YouTube or in Telegram.
You know what? And as an example, like to be more tactical, if we did that once a month, I'd probably be pretty smart. Like where we spend a month thinking about it, right? And giving true great answers that people may want.
That one I think we all thought about and brought some good stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
It was fun.
Next 300 episodes, the other thing, obviously we need to be live. I mean, Chris mentioned it's like, we got to be live. But I think before in front of like a group of people, it would just have to be the three of us. Like we haven't even done that. I still haven't met Jack, right?
Which is insane to think. It's pretty wild.
But again, I think our relationship is in such a way is like, there's just call it chemistry or whatever. It's like, we're just homies at this point, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's amazing.
I hope that comes through in the audio. And I think it does. Because that is the genuine feeling. Yeah. So I think us hanging out together is a no-brainer. It's just, man, like me and Jack have families. Bilal's in a long-term relationship. And you know, moving forward, moving towards that direction. It's like, things change, man. It's like, we just...
Yeah.
We don't all live in the same city. It's just... In an ideal world, that would be amazing if we could all sit together. And
if we were all in the same place, I would 100% say that we go studio, we do it in person, we get massive guests. Because that's the thing. We all know the potential of doing stuff like that. But we also, like we said, we have to fit it into our lives in our own way. And so
it's just like,
sometimes that is all you need.
It just doesn't shake out, right? The answer, it just, you know what? And it just doesn't shake out. That's the reality. And we're happy with that and we're fine with that.
Yeah.
And we're going to keep this thing is going for everything. Bilal said, this is not lip service. It really is. We do enjoy this. We love hearing from, man, I get like the amount of random people that message, just random, that I had no idea. Just, but hey, I listen and I'm like, damn, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the best thing.
Right. So.
Yeah, completely.
I say that. Is there anything else from that? Is there disagreement? This is a good topic.
Go on.
The main one was the Bilal on the interview guest and back to forth. Right? Not to say that he was against it, but Bilal did bring up a good point. Is like, do you want to, like, a guest that doesn't listen to NIA is not going to be a good guest because they're not going to be in that
shoot the vibe mode,
right?
Yeah.
So exactly. I think that's more of what Bilal was saying. Like, I don't want to say that Bilal was like axing all the guests. It's like, you know, does this person listen? Do you understand? Does they understand the vibe? Otherwise, from that, we have talked about the new stuff. It's like, do we want to be in this new cycle business? But I think the larger point that Bilal brought up is just more, what is kind of curious for us? We know we're sitting here once a week. That's kind of it.
It's like, the way I always say it is that's the filter. It's the same way like with Creator Lab, my filter was, do I genuinely want to speak to this person? And that sounds silly because like, you know, most of the guests I had in Creator Lab have been really incredible people, but I'll be honest, there was a time where you're getting pitched from a publicist and you're like, oh, that person's got a good name and they've got this and they're what, and I would always answer like, oh, I'd love to meet that person, but then was I genuinely interested in their topics? And there was, and so after a while I had to filter that out for myself, and so that is because ultimately, again, it comes back to why you're doing this in the first place. Like, it's not, if everything's about growth, it's not like, it takes the fun out of it. You know what I mean?
100%.
And so if it's a business, it's different. But this is not a pure business. This is a mostly a creative outlet and a fun outlet for us. So yeah, that's how I would see it. And then last thing on the topics thing for you is like for example, the way I see it is like if Trung has a topic he wants to talk about, he should talk about it. Like he shares it in the group. Like last week you went to about Bluey. I didn't even know what Bluey was, but yeah. I'm like, oh, Trung's done research on it and he wants to talk about it. We should talk about it. It's fine.
Talk about it, yeah.
And so we don't have like a, oh, less. The only time we've ever said like, don't talk about something is where like, I think once or twice we talked about like war stuff, like Ukraine, for example. And then since then we were like, actually, we don't know enough about any of these things. Two, it's not really our wheelhouse. And there's a lot of downside. There's a lot of like, We can't talk about all of them.
We don't need to opine on this, right?
Exactly. Like, we're not going to solve anything or add any value to it. And also, yeah. It's like once you talk about one, you can say, well, why aren't you talking about this war? Why aren't you talking about 100%. These people? And I agree, because ultimately, like, there's lots of things that have happened since then, which we basically haven't spoken about, because we're like, well, that's like, let's be consistent. Let's be consistently inconsistent, basically, you know what I mean?
It's not our business, basically. Dude, I 100% agree with you. It's like, I'll say it. It was a more Middle East related, right?
Yeah,
like,
course,
I'm like,
yeah.
Hey, listen, should we address this? Blah, blah, great points. It's like, this is such a difficult topic.
Yeah.
And I fully agree with him. It's like,
there's no winning in this conversation.
We're not going to be able to give this credence, right? We're not going to be able to deliver on this, not because we don't want to, but A, we're not going to LARP, and B, this is just not what this show is about.
Completely, yeah. And that's not to say it's not worth talking about. If you want to talk about it, you should. And we all have our opinions, obviously. But like we said, that's not what people are here for. They're here to have a good time and learn something and listen to the boys chat. So talking of which, I think we can probably call it there, yeah, Trung? Unless you want... There were some other questions, but realistically...
No, we'll wait till Jack's back, and this right, episode cool. ran a bit longer because of me.
Great. It was great. Good chat. Appreciate you on here always. Thanks, everyone, for submitting those questions. We've saved them. We'll sprinkle some in throughout the next few weeks if there's any more.
When Jack's back, it'll be...
Yeah, good to chat about some of those. Anyway, thanks for being here. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Let us know what you think of the Kendrick and Drake beef. What's going on there? And your favorite rap beef of all time. And we will see you guys next week. Cheers.